Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care. Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
This is the podcast where the dark and creepy things we don't talk about discover a voice. This is Into the Paranormal with Tony Bruschi.
So picture this. You move into a house that feels, well, let's just say, off. You can feel it in the air, right? Like the walls themselves are watching you, waiting for something to happen. You think maybe it's the age of the place, an old 100-year-old home in New Zealand with creaky floors and ancient windows that slam shut out of nowhere. Perfectly explainable, right? You'd think so, but then it gets weirder. You hear footsteps, not just random creaks, but heavy running footsteps charging down the hall towards your bedroom. You know the kind, loud enough to make your heart stop. But when you check, there's no one there. But that's just the start. The cat starts acting strange, terrified even. Personal items, your possessions, start moving around the house like they've got a life of their own. And then the most unsettling part, the spirit starts calling your name. Yeah, you heard that right. In the dead of night, you're woken up by a whisper, something right beside your bed. But you can't see it. You can't see anything. Now imagine discovering that someone died in that house. Right in that hallway where you keep hearing those footsteps. Oh, and it gets worse. There's a suicide in the family, too. Someone else with the same name, same age as you, who took their own life decades ago. Coincidence? Maybe. But at what point do these things stop being coincidences and start becoming something else? Something darker. So what do you do when you feel a presence around you, something or someone watching you every single night? And let's not forget the most bizarre part. Your beloved Buddhist prayer flags, tied securely, start disappearing and turning up in impossible places outside the house. Who or what is trying to send a message? And why does it seem so personal? All right, now it's time to dive into the letter itself and hear this story straight from the source. Dear Tony, I guess I should start by saying that while I've always been somewhat open to the idea of spirits, I never really expected to experience them myself. At least, not to the degree I have lately. You see, my family's always had some connection to the spiritual world. My great-grandmother was a spiritualist, my grandmother a believer, and my mother, well, she's had more experiences than she cares to admit. Some good, some downright terrifying. Once she was even pushed down the stairs by something she couldn't see. So you can understand why I've always believed that the spirit world is real, even though it hadn't directly affected me. At least, not until recently. It started when I moved into this house. It was November 1st, 2009. I had just moved in with a friend of mine who'd recently gone through a rough breakup with his wife. The place was a mess when I arrived. Minimal furniture, the air smelled stale, and there was this general feeling of sadness hanging over the place. It was dark, gloomy, and I could tell my friend hated being there. He had been crashing at another friend's place, avoiding it altogether, which is why he asked me to move in and bring some life into the place. And I did. For a while, things seemed to improve. My friend even commented that I had brightened the house up, made it feel like a home again. But that feeling didn't last. The house, Tony, it felt like it had secrets. You know that kind of place, where you walk in and the air feels heavier, like something's watching, waiting. At first, I brushed it off as nerves, new house, new surroundings. It'll pass, I thought. But it didn't. Instead, things got weirder. It was a couple of weeks after moving in that I experienced the first real incident. It was late and I was settling in for bed. I just turned off the TV and was about to close my eyes when I heard it. Footsteps. Not just any footsteps, Tony. Heavy ones. They were running down the hall toward my bedroom door. The second they reached my door, silence. My heart was racing. I grabbed an old Spanish sword I had lying around. Don't ask why I had it. That's a long story in itself. And pressed my ear to the door. Nothing. Absolute silence. I opened the door slowly, expecting to find someone standing there. But the hall was empty. No one was there. But that wasn't the end of it. I was standing there trying to convince myself I had imagined the whole thing when I heard it. The sound of a window slamming. It was my flatmate's window, the one that slides up and down on a rail, and it had slammed so loudly that it echoed through the entire house. Here's the thing, though. The window was locked. When I checked, there was no way it could have moved, and yet it had. That night, I didn't sleep much. I kept the sword next to me half-jokingly, but part of me really believed I might need it. It didn't stop there. Over the next few weeks, strange things kept happening. I started waking up at exactly 5 a.m. every morning, and sometimes I could swear I was waking up to someone calling my name. It felt like they were right next to me, but when I opened my eyes, there was no one. It wasn't even dark anymore. There was enough morning light creeping into the room that I could see clearly. But still, no one. And yet I felt it. That presence. You know what I mean? And it wasn't just me. The cat, a new addition to the house, started acting strange. He'd sit for long stretches staring at nothing, but in that defensive, crouched position, like he was ready to attack or be attacked. He'd run up and down the hallway as if chasing something, or worse, as if something was chasing him. Sometimes he'd stare at me with this wild, fearful look, only to run off as if he couldn't stand to be near me. But moments before, he'd been curled up, purring on my lap. It made no sense. It wasn't just the feeling of being watched either. Things in the house started to move. I'm not talking about casual misplacements. I had these Buddhist prayer flags that I'd hung in the hallway, tied securely, mind you. One morning I woke up, and they were gone. I searched the house and found them outside, lying on the driveway. At first, I blamed the cat, but after a few more incidents, I made sure to tie them extra tight. The next morning, they were gone again, this time outside in the backyard. There was no way the cat had done it. It had to be something else, and then came the night of January 2nd, 2010. This is where things got real. I had just come home from a New Year's trip, tired and ready to crash after a long flight. The house felt off the moment I walked in. It was unusually hot, though the heat pump was off, and the air felt still, too still. I searched for the cat, but couldn't find him. The place was dead quiet. I went into my room, turned on the TV, and tried to ignore the unsettling feeling, but it wouldn't go away. Then it happened again. The footsteps. They started in the lounge, loud and heavy, running down the hall toward my bedroom, just like before. I heard them stop at my flatmate's room, and even though I knew no one was there, I got up to check. His room was empty. The cat was still in the lounge, so it wasn't him. I closed the door thinking that would help, but it didn't. Minutes later, the footsteps came again, louder this time, charging through the hall and stopping right outside my flatmate's room. I stayed in bed, my heart racing, knowing there was no one there, but terrified all the same. And then, in the middle of all this, I realized the prayer flags were gone again, vanished without a trace, even though I had tied them down tight and the cat had no access to the hall that night. Something was in that house with me, Tony. Something was watching, moving things, making itself known. And this wasn't just a ghost story. I looked up the history of the house and discovered that a man named William James Clutterbuck had died in that very hallway in 1939 from heart failure. I started putting the pieces together. The footsteps I kept hearing, it must have been him, right? trying to leave, trying to reach the front door for help before it was too late. But there was more. William's grandson, also named William, had committed suicide in 1997 at the age of 27. The same age I was when all this started happening. Is it possible they're connected? That William is somehow reaching out to me because he sees something of his grandson in me? Maybe he knows I've been struggling too, dealing with my own dark thoughts, my best friend's suicide attempts, my girlfriend's alcoholism. It's all too much to be just coincidence, don't you think? I didn't think things could get worse after those first few weeks, but I was wrong. In fact, I was very wrong. It's hard to even put into words how much more intense the experiences got. I thought I could handle it, brush it off as the quirks of an old house, but this was something else entirely. After that night on January 2nd, I couldn't shake the feeling that William, or something, was trying to communicate with me. It wasn't just the footsteps anymore. It was the sense that I was being watched constantly, like something was hovering over me, just waiting for me to acknowledge it. I even started talking to him. Yes, talking to thin air. I'd say, "William, if it's you, just stop playing games. Tell me what you want." Of course, I never got a direct answer, but that didn't stop the signs from coming. One morning, I woke up again at exactly 5 a.m., as usual, but this time I felt an odd chill. You know when you get that sinking feeling in your gut, like something bad is about to happen? That's what this was. I sat up trying to shake it off, but when I looked around the room, I noticed something strange. My grandmother's lamp, the one I inherited when she passed, was flickering. It hadn't done that before. I got out of bed, half expecting it to stop as soon as I approached, but instead, it turned off completely. Just like that. I don't know why, but for some reason it didn't scare me. It actually felt comforting, like maybe my grandmother was there watching over me. It was the first time in weeks that I felt any kind of peace in that house, even if it was fleeting. But that peace didn't last. That same day, I decided to look into replacing my prayer flags. I had always found comfort in them, a sense of protection, and without them, I felt vulnerable. But Tony, I couldn't shake the feeling that replacing them might anger whatever was in the house. It's as if those flags were the last bit of control I had over the situation, and now they were gone. I ended up leaving them off, hoping it would calm things down. That night, I was alone again. My flatmate was on another night shift, and I had the house to myself. The cat, ever skittish lately, had curled up in the corner of the room, staring at the door like it was expecting something to walk through at any moment. And then it happened again. Footsteps. They started slow this time, as if someone was pacing back and forth down the hallway, just outside my door. I was frozen, Tony. I couldn't bring myself to open the door this time. Something told me that if I did, I wouldn't like what I saw, and instead, I just lay there, listening as the footsteps grew heavier, faster. The pacing turned into running again, and I braced myself for what came next, the sound of the window slamming, but this time, it wasn't just one window. It was every window in the house. Bam, 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 one after the other, echoing through the halls like gunshots. It was deafening. I grabbed the sword again, more out of instinct than anything, and stayed in bed gripping it like my life depended on it. I don't know how long I stayed like that. Minutes? Hours? It felt like forever, but eventually, the noise stopped. The windows were silent. The footsteps faded. I let out a breath I didn't even realize I'd been holding and tried to convince myself that it was over. But then I saw it. Something moved in the hallway. At first, I thought it was the cat, but no. The cat was still curled up in the corner, wide-eyed and trembling. No, what I saw was a shadow, a figure standing in the doorway, just out of reach of the light from my room. I couldn't make out any details, just the silhouette of a person. I couldn't even tell if it was male or female, but I knew it wasn't living. My heart was pounding in my chest, my hands gripping that ridiculous sword like it could actually do something. I tried to speak, but no words came out. And then just like that, the figure was gone. It didn't fade or dissolve, it just wasn't there anymore. The hall was empty again, and the cat had bolted out of the room, leaving me completely alone. I spent the rest of the night sitting up in bed, staring at the door, half expecting it to return. I never saw the figure again after that, but the feeling of being watched, of not being alone in that house, never left. The footsteps continued, sometimes closer, sometimes further away, but always there, always reminding me that something was still lingering, still watching. Tony, I'm convinced now that whatever was in that house wasn't just William. I think there was something else, something darker. It's hard to explain, but I feel like William was trying to protect me, maybe even warn me about whatever else was there. I don't know if it's connected to his grandson's death or if there's something older, more sinister, attached to that house, but it felt like two forces were at work, one trying to reach out and the other trying to keep control. Eventually, I had to leave. I couldn't stay there anymore, not with the way things were escalating. My friend, the one I had moved in with, still doesn't believe in the paranormal. He thinks I'm crazy or that I've let my imagination run wild. But Tony, I know what I experienced. I know what I saw, what I felt. The house is quiet now, as far as I know. I've moved on, but the memory of those nights still haunts me. I can't shake the feeling that there are things we don't understand. Things that watch us. Things that try to communicate in ways we can't explain. I'm not sure what William or whatever else was in that house wanted from me, but I do know one thing. I'm not going back to find out. Thanks for listening, Tony. It feels good to get it all off my chest, even if it still doesn't make any sense. Sincerely, Tomo. All right, let's break this down. What do we have here? And you've got a story that on the surface feels like a classic haunted house tale. Old home, mysterious noises, flickering lights, and eerie footsteps. But dig deeper, and this isn't just about an old spirit rattling around. No, what's fascinating about Tomo's experience is how personal it feels. There's a connection between him and the spirit world that's so oddly specific. It almost makes you wonder if these entities were reaching out not just to scare him, but to communicate. Now let's talk about William. The idea that William, a man who died in the house decades earlier, is walking the halls and making his presence known is intriguing, sure. But it's the emotional link, William dying in the hallway, possibly rushing for help, that casts a long shadow over this whole experience. If we assume this is William pacing the floors at night, running down the halls, maybe he's stuck in that final desperate moment of his life, unable to move on. Then, there's the unsettling part about William's grandson committing suicide at the same age Tomo is now. Let that sink in for a minute. Tomo moves into the house at the same age. The grandson died, dealing with his own personal turmoil, trying to make sense of life, while this shadow of a tragic past lurks in the background. It's almost as if these experiences are a twisted echo of unresolved pain, a cycle that could be repeating itself. But why Tomo? What's the link between him and William's family? Does William see something in Tomo that reminds him of his grandson? Or is it more than just a haunting, maybe a plea for help that transcends the boundary between the living and the dead? But here's where it gets even more intriguing. The Buddhist prayer flags. Think about it. Prayer flags are meant to bring peace, good fortune, and protection. They blow in the wind, spreading their blessings out into the universe. Yet in this house, they vanish, not once, not twice, but repeatedly. Now, I've heard of spirits messing with objects, but this feels deliberate. Like something or someone is trying to strip away the only form of spiritual protection Tomo had. And it isn't just any object they're targeting, it's a symbol of hope and peace. That's not a coincidence, my friends. That's a calculated move by a force that doesn't want peace. It wants power. And don't even get me started on the cat. Cats, as we know, are hypersensitive to energies and spirits. When a cat that's typically affectionate starts acting like it's being chased by something unseen, you've got to take that seriously. Whatever this entity is, it isn't friendly. And it isn't just William anymore. There's something else at play here. Something darker, more malevolent. So what are we dealing with? Could it be that William is trying to protect Tomo from something darker in the house? It's possible. Or maybe William himself isn't aware of what's happening. He's just stuck, forever running down that hallway, trying to escape the death that took him. Maybe the grandson's tragic end left an imprint, a stain that's tied to the family's legacy and the house itself. The key question is, why now? Why did all of this start happening after Tomo moved in? Was it his personal struggles that somehow stirred the spirits? Or was it simply fate drawing him into the house at this specific moment in his life? The truth is, we may never know for sure. But one thing's clear. This wasn't just a house with creaky floors and flickering lights. This was something deeper. Something that reached across time and space to tap Tomo on the shoulder and say, "I'm still here." Whether it was William, his grandson, or something much darker, we're left with an unsettling thought. Maybe the dead don't just want to haunt us. They want to connect. They want us to understand their pain, their unfinished business. And sometimes they choose the person who's most vulnerable to make that connection. Tomo may never get all the answers he's looking for, but one thing's for sure. He'll never forget the nights he spent in that house, where the past refused to stay buried, and the spirits of the dead reached out through the thin veil of time to leave their mark.
Want more ghost stories of the paranormal? Press subscribe now wherever you get podcasts. We're dropping new ghost stories every single day, all year long. This is Into the Paranormal with Tony Bruschi.